Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, hope you're excited, Jackson. Tonight, just met over the board. SP Futures up 475. We have Sir Kevin O'Neill as well. Dow Futures up 51. NASDAQ Futures up 25. So we're bouncing back from yesterday's pretty big sell-off. Oil up 43 cents. A little bit of a bounce back there. But there's one I didn't call on the way down. Thank God I don't trust my opinion and always have puts, for God's sake. Otherwise, that has to be one of the most intriguing sell-offs with the Saudi thing not even on the radar when it was $74 and everybody thought 80-85, you know, with the Iran situation. All of a sudden, we have another wrinkle into the supply, and the thing goes down $7 instead of up, which is bizarre. Anyway, 10-year yield, 3.18. Kevin, it's the ever-changing marketplace, as they say. Nothing's ever obvious.
Kevin, so what you're saying is buy the dip.
Well, we did get longer and down lower, I've got some 79 calls in the XLE, and I think 72. That's a little bit of a miss. It's like 10% in 2 weeks, when things are supposed to be going up. Remember a week and a half ago we were talking about they're squeezing the hell out of Iran and how some people were predicting $100 by the end of the year on Brent, and all was doing was going up every day, and you had another. You've had two big supply numbers come out of here showing that supply is in the Cushing and the other place. Both the U.S. government supply number and the American Petroleum Institute numbers came in real hot, which is what sent the oil down. But still kind of surprised, especially with natural gas not coming back a bump. Still at like 325, exactly if I'm going to say what it is, but still up like 325. No, it's actually 317. It's down 3 cents today. But still, that's way up from the 271. But it's, you know, it's a little bit seasonal. You would expect the gas demand to be down this time of the year, but still, you expect the natural gas to be starting to creep up, as some people have their heat on in Chicago, I would think. But anyway, so that's where that is. We've got.
I think the geopolitics behind oil will be interesting for a little while because. You know, it's when you have the contention between Iran and Saudi Arabia for Islamic supremacy in the region.
Yes.
Then you know, if anything that's a misstep by Saudi Arabia has a chance to relatively strengthen Iran, and it'll be interesting to see because among the things that the United States can really do about Saudi Arabia, and I did see an interesting. Commentator saying he's hearing a lot that they're really trying to engineer that this guy that sort of assumed the heir apparent and the actually heir current role. They're trying to have him moved aside for somebody else, but I don't know if that'll happen. But if they get direct evidence, maybe it will. But in the meantime, if the U.S. really wants to put pressure on them, let's go back to the table with Iran. And see if you can start doing some kind of a rework of the deal, because that's, you know, the Saudis will look at that and go, no.
Well, that's right. And when did we talk about this, Matty? It was we had somebody on. Was it Wayne, I think. And he talked about how he had everybody at that same level, all the princes kind of that his, you know, there's a lot of heirs over there. Didn't he say that he pretty much had shoved everybody out? I'm pretty sure he claimed that he coordinated his consolidated is the word. Consolidated is power.
Well, yeah, he consolidated. They, you know, remember they arrested everybody and put him up in the hotel?
But right before that, though, Kevin, I think he got...
And then beat and tortured him into submission there. And don't take that as the gospel quote. I'm not that informed. But, he's sort of consolidated power, but that doesn't mean it can't be unconsolidated. It's a very large, very dysfunctional ruling family there. And lots can change, you know, depending on which way the wind's blowing.
If this guy gets
the country in a relatively worse position, there may be a consequence to it. I don't know how it'll play out. I couldn't even begin to predict, but it's just, you know, if you don't care about it a lot, it's really kind of fun to sit back and watch.
I find it.
Of course, we all have reason to care about it, so that's, yeah. You know, that's different.
Well, plus you don't like seeing people dismembered too much.
Sure, of course. Yeah, of course not.
Yeah, I just kind of surprised that you, first of all, it never even crossed my mind, Kevin, because I sure as hell hope you're right, but, from what I don't know why, but I started picking up on this story a long time ago, and I know we've had Wayne on a couple times talking about it. I think he's been in a 3-year phase of consolidating power to the point where he the only thing that could derail the kid, I'll say kid because he's 30 something, is if somebody gave the old man a pill and all of a sudden he didn't have Alzheimer's tomorrow and realized what the kid was doing. Because I think the old man's totally out of it, and I think all the people on his level have been cowered or gotten rid of or something. I mean, I think he's been a Joe Stalin about this. I mean, maybe not as good, but pretty damn good. From what I understand, I hope you're right that there's somebody else to say, hey, look, this guy's screwing up. Let's vote him out. I don't know if that's happening. I hope it does, but boy, oh boy, it's the first I even heard of it.
It would be an interesting development. I don't know if it'll go anywhere or not for just the reasons you cited, but, I have at least seen some commentary to that effect.
Well, he at least, let's put it this way. One only knows. I honestly don't think that he would believe this way, but he would need the FBI and the CIA to do it, sometimes Trump hints at, and I hope he's only hinting at it, that you need to have those guys. And from what I understand, the secret police are, that's the first place he got, Kevin, and I don't know who the how he got it, but it's a cousin or somebody. It's the first thing he did like 3 years ago was get absolute control of whatever the secret police is. I don't know how you go about doing that, but I think that was the first thing he did, from what I recall. I don't know, you remember that, Manny? Because it was from Wayne. But everybody who could be a no good Nick basically is on his side, I think. Whether they want to be or not, I don't know, but it's a different, I mean, kind of a different world.
Right, but those are also the kind of people that are going to go where the wind's blowing. So
that's true.
If the wind starts to blow a different direction, especially the really good ones. Have you ever seen that corporate politics guy who always seems to morph to where the new power is, seamlessly, and, it's almost the doublespeak from 1984. Hey, I've always been with this guy, you know.
Who does Kevin sound like now, Matt? Mr. Weber?
When he says that everyone's gravitating toward whoever's in power?
Sounds like Claude Rains. I blow at the wind, and right now the wind is from Vichy, Casablanca.
Yeah, gotcha. Yep.
Well, Kevin, we had another... we had the big update the other day to try and bounce back from the nasty day before, and all of a sudden yesterday we're down another 300-some points, 4-something at the low, actually probably 5-something at the low. S&P futures down another 40, not futures, the S&P was down another 40, NASDAQ down 157. This is somewhat getting serious. I know we're bouncing a little bit this morning, but down 40, up 4 doesn't exactly cut it, if you know what I mean.
Seems like we're sort of stepping down the ladder. So take a step down,
yeah.
Pause, take a step down, pause.
Yeah, and we've got people on...
And hopefully we don't miss one of those steps and just fall.
Right, because we've managed.
Yeah, I'm just rolling with the metaphors now.
Oh yeah, you're again, and I, you know, and we, and at some point here, we're going to be testing. Of course, the airwaves are ablaze with people saying, "Don't ever sell! What a great buying opportunity!" Blah 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 blah. And you know what, Kevin? I don't know how I mean, I couldn't do that anyway because I have registrations basically out the behind, and you're not supposed to give investment advice on the air, and I never do. But I don't see how you could. How does anybody know? I mean, I'm as good at this, I think, as anybody. And when it comes to hedging people's portfolio, I'd put my spurs up against anybody's. When it comes to option trading, I don't know how many people would be any better in retail option trading. But how the hell? I just described a guy who I think has been in this business a long time, how everything in the world was pointing north for oil 10 days ago, and it turned around and retraced 10%. How tough this is to try and figure out valuations. And that's why you always make sure that you're protected, because you never know if you're right. You never know. And you can lean one way, but you got to have yourself covered the other way. I mean, it's very much like in Field of Dreams. You know, he's got two balls. He probably won't throw it at you, but carefully, don't stick it in your ear. I mean, it's the exact same thing. I mean, I don't see how people can, year after year, do stuff and tell people like Larry Kudlow, the Goldilocks economy with Bush before the crash, and now the guy's our economic advisor, for God's sake. Jim Cramer, who I understand everybody loves the guy, and I probably would too if I met him. I mean, he must have, if you didn't buy Sears under his tout 10 years ago, and Eddie Lambert was he made Solomon look like a dum-dum. This most brilliant man that ever walked. The place, he ran it right down a rat hole, Kevin. How do people have no, don't they have any shame? If I came out and said you absolutely have to buy gold today, take your mother's last penny, and all of a sudden a week from now it was down 100 points, I'd feel awful. I would never want to do that. Don't these guys have any shame? I just don't get it.
Well, again, remember all the people on TV are there not because they're such fantastic experts, but because they're entertaining on TV.
Wow, but people actually listen
now,
to them.
Now, in some cases, there are some real good experts too. But you remember, the primary goal is to get people to watch your show.
Yes, that is the truth. But I mean, but people do listen to these guys and ladies. I mean, they absolutely do. When I've had clients come in and I say, "How'd you get this portfolio from CNBC?" I go, "Okay," and which is fine. I mean, it's not I learn a lot from listening, Kevin, because I don't have the time or the people. Most of my stuff is in indexes. Oil, or it could be in precious metals now, which I never wanted to be in, but now I am, because the option stuff's set up. But I mean, the only way I'm going to find out about some esoteric company in like the biotech area, or who actually has a certain drug that's coming up, is by watching TV, because those guys do know an awful, with the guests they have, they do come up with stocks and stuff that you could never find yourself, because there's so many of them. I mean, so you do learn from people. There's no doubt about that. I mean,
but I think the real way to learn is because you get a guest on and the guest doesn't have a lot of time to talk. But if you're intrigued, then that's where you can go follow up
right.
on the guest. What is this guest written? You know, and you can get more detail.
Well, that actually
I wouldn't get it off of TV. That's for sure.
By the way, Kevin, that's actually done on purpose. Dr. J had a party, this was years ago, and I used to go on CNBC. No, not that often, you know, four or five times. And one day I was, on about Walmart earnings, you know, so I dress up, you know, I go down, they put the makeup on, and of course everybody said I look terrible on TV. Which of course I did, because you don't know where the camera is in the room in Chicago. So you're like looking around to see where, there's no obvious point that you should be looking
at. Right,
you're
talking to nobody.
Yeah, but not just that. There's no obvious point at where the camera is somewhere up in the ceiling. And you don't know where it is, so you can't look at it. So when you're kind of looking around, she goes, who are you, Tricky Dick Dixon? Your eyes are whipping back and forth. You look like you're a ferret. And I go, hey, thanks, Rod. You can always call on your girlfriend to give you the best heads up. But the anyway, so I was on. The last time was the day Warren Buffett bought Burlington Northern. And Joe Kernan says to me, "Well, Tom, what do you think? What do you think about that buy?" And I said, "Well, Joe, I actually know something about railroads. I don't know squat about Walmart." And you know, he's buying a monopoly. And he goes, "Well, what do you mean?" I go, "Well, Joe, there's only five Western railroads, and there's like one up north, and they got all these oil basins and everything all starting to percolate up there. He's buying a monopoly. He's got no competition." "Well, as we can see, Tom knows something about railroads. We'll talk to you next time." They wanted no part of anybody saying that you know, the government essentially let him buy a monopoly in an area that now is going to be, because there's nobody else up there. It's the Burlington Northern is the whole show. The closest tracks other than that are Union Pacific and are 600 miles down. And
well, and yeah, and I think a lot of that is just because everything is sort of the headline news model, where, you know, people don't watch for very long, especially in the morning, because they're getting ready to go to work, or, you know, people are getting the kids out the door to school. Whatever it is they're doing, you know, it's short segments. So it's short repetitive segments, frankly. They may bring different guests on for each segment, but essentially they're covering the same material and they're doing it in short bites.
Well, that's what I ran into this producer at the Giants party. It's a birthday party or something, and he goes, "How come you don't come out anymore?" I said, "Well, we've really been asked that much, but I said I don't really
yeah, because nobody wants to talk about railroads.
Well, that part's true. We're asking a question and actually like, get an answer out of somebody. But I mean, the idea of going over there and being on a panel with five people, getting to say 20 words, it takes you like it's a 2 hour round trip. I mean, I just said, you know, so I came back the last time and I counted just on. What's the morning show, Manny? Squawk on the Street or whatever the hell it is?
Yeah.
Squawk Box.
Squawk Box. I counted something like 25 guests in like 2 hours, and or an hour and a half, where the hell they are. I said to the guy, you know, I went back and my conclusion was you really didn't need me. My 20 words didn't add anything. He goes, well, that's how we keep the stuff going. We never let anybody come to a conclusion. We never actually drive a subject to where you learn anything. We just get new people and start all over again. That's how you keep your ratings up. You never actually, it's not radio. It's not you and I talking about detail on the Kansas case or something like that. That's not what they want at all. They want
it's pace. It's all about the pace.
And having good people, once in a while they'll let somebody talk because he has so many spurs. They let that guy last Friday talk, the guy, Stephen Roach, who was the head of Morgan Stanley Asia Forever. He was the guy I was talking about. I was sort of vindicated with the Fed in the 70s where they denied the inflation. All of a sudden, one day they go, it looks like we got inflation, which I think they're sort of doing now, maybe not to the same extent, but they let him talk. He was on by him. There are a few people that they get the cachet where they come on by themselves and they talk, but very few. I mean, everybody else is you know. So what's this weekend? If we knock off about three more people in the top 10 in the college, is it going to be the biggest stew we've ever had, or what? College football.
Well, I don't know. You know, I really haven't looked at the schedule. What are some of the good games that are out there?
I don't know. But hey, before we get into that, I have to say, is when you don't watch when you watch the game and it just doesn't involve your team, I never thought, Kevin, if you would have said what are the most out of all the sports, what you think are the least rigged, I would have said Major League Baseball. And now after watching this Houston Boston series. It seems to me that Major League Baseball wants Boston in there. I can't believe that home run call the other night. Fan interference in the third.
It was a terrible call, and the idea that they couldn't get a camera angle that would overrule it, so it had to stand is just it's preposterous.
I mean, we were talking yesterday when fan interference is if a fan enters somehow the field of play, correct? If you enter the stands, you don't have a right to the ball. I mean,
correct.
That ball was clearly in the stands. I don't see how the guy was like in the second row that it hit him in the gut.
Yeah, it didn't look like the guy reached forward at all.
No. But so last night I'm watching, and all of a sudden the pitcher Verlander, he's got two strikes on his mulp, wings one damn near right down the middle. The guy calls it a ball, and the whole. The people in the booth are going, wow, that looked pretty good. The next pitch, the guy hits the home run. The next inning, the Boston pitcher is 6 inches outside and everything's a strike. And I'm going, well, this is obvious. They didn't like the fact that the Houston manager criticized him the night before. I might as well go home. And I didn't have to watch the rest. I knew an hour that one was coming out. I mean,
you know, every sport has its great ways of rigging it if you want to. So it really lends itself to conspiracy theories. But balls and strikes certainly is one for baseball. Holding calls, things like that for football. Basketball, I don't know. It's hard to say when you watch the Bulls. You don't have to rig the games against them. They're going to defend. So,
it's hard to rig a game when it's just five people standing behind the three-point line when the first guy over half-court shoots. It's hard to rig that one. Nobody's close enough to touch
it. Yeah, although, you know, back in the day, there was always the conspiracy theory that the NBA wanted Jordan in the finals, so they'd get him there. I think Jordan did more to get himself there.
Well, I do, too, but I will say, Kevin, you and I, well, we used to go down to, you weren't necessarily part of that crew because you weren't even there yet, but when I was a sophomore, Billy Hake and I, two nights a week, would go down to Samaries. This is how Maddie Weber, this is long before cable, the saloons in South Bend would have a big antenna up top where they could actually drag down Channel 9. You couldn't get it like anywhere. Nobody got it in their house or anything. So if you wanted to watch the Hawks or the Bulls, you had to go down. So guess what the prices were at Samaries, Matty? Pitcher, a Drury's, $1.35, and a seriously good meatball sandwich for 59 cents.
Oh, so, can't beat it!
Can't beat it. So $3, and you were good to go. You got two pitchers and a meatball sandwich for yourself for $3. Anyway, we get down there all the time.
Not that you drank two pitchers by yourself.
Oh, never, that would never happen. No, especially after like playing basketball for 2 hours, that could happen easy. Anyway, so the and I was skinny too. That's the weird part of it. So I used to think, Kevin, in those days that the only teams that won on the road were Boston and maybe the Lakers when they had Wilt, but and Magic. But it was before Magic, but Wilt. The other teams, all the teams that were like 500, and I used to go to bowl games 20 times a year because we could walk up and go in. And I just had the feeling that it came to me one night that you got the home team, got two homer calls, maybe three, in the last 2 to 3 minutes, and if you still blew the game, you blew it. But all the teams that were 500, there was a period in basketball where the teams that were like 500 in the middle of the pack were always like 650, 700 at home and 300, 350 on the road. So you'd say to yourself, as John Madden would say, a venue doesn't normally win a game, does it? I think they just wanted to send the home crowd away happy. The teams, it wasn't like it was bad basketball, it was good basketball. The Bulls had a good team. There were a lot less teams in the NBA, so everybody had a star or two. But I'm not saying, you know, it's like now where the guys are, you know, bigger and faster, but the fact is, it was pretty good ball. With the teams in the middle of the pack, you could expect a couple of homer calls in the last minute or two. And if your fans walked away happy and then you went and visited them the next week, the same thing had happened to them and everybody was happy. I mean, it was more like pro wrestling than it was a real sport, I thought, for a long period of time. Then all of a sudden you get in the playoffs and things, then it was real basketball. You know, when it was the, you know, Lakers playing the Celtics, I honestly think they called the game straight there because they didn't care who won. But is this totally out of the air of Mars like I can do or what? Or am I somewhat right here, you think? But it is entertainment, like you say.
Yeah, you may be. I don't remember from that era very well. So, you know, I don't have an opinion to offer, but yeah, I could see how it would have been that way.
Well, I mean, even now, I think they would rather, you would rather have, I don't think the Bears, say the Bears are 500. You'd probably rather be them win at home and lose on the road, right? I mean, football's gotten to the point now, I think, where they don't even really care about the home crowd, to be honest with you. You know, and they've got that way. The Cubs, I don't think, do either. I mean, they actually get as many people for a day game as they do a night game, but must be the TV ratings or something that they'd rather have a night game. I'm saying
all the TV ratings. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I think people are caring less and less about the home crowd. In college football, no. I mean, they keep wanting more and more people there, because I think that really goes to the home team, right? I mean, more so than, I mean, when you get Notre Dame playing somebody that they would never play a home and home against. I mean, where Michigan, what do you suppose the home gate is, for God's sake, Kevin? It's got to be $80 a ticket, isn't it? Or is it up to 100? 110,000 people?
It could be more, yeah. I think most people do differential pricing based on the opponent. So for a big game, yeah, it's, you know, you're 120.
But the Irish people are falling all over themselves. What do I have to go through to get the parking pass next week and pay $100 for a parking pass? And people are salivating over it. I could have sold that for, what do you figure, $350 easy? I could, for the parking pass, the tickets nobody wants, but the parking pass you can't get, right? I mean, I would never buy one from Craig for $100 from scalping.
They are scarce, and yeah. Look, maybe I'm just an old fart and curmudgeon, but you know the whole tailgating thing is a little bit lost on me anyway. I don't. You know, partying in a parking lot is just, you know, I've been to some that are really elaborate, and that's great. You know, it's just a nice party outside on a nice day. But I am perfectly happy with going to a tavern, watching as much of the early games as I can, and then, getting in the car and driving over in time to just walk into the stadium.
Well, how much do you think our buddy Leo spent over the years with, I don't know the name of the accounting firm, but it was one of them, you know, somebody. They would use it as part of their recruiting. Every week the table was like, what, 3 8-foot tables in a row with a generator and more chow than you know what to do with, and they're trying to get all the kids from the accounting departments to come on over, and they had people from the firm there talking to them and everything. I mean, it was a big deal. What do you figure that tab was for a season?
Pretty steep, but again, that's different. That's recruiting. So
yeah.
But yeah, for what we did last week. Can you hold that open for me?
You're saying that the chicken I got from the Myers wasn't good?
It was delicious, Tom.
Sandwiches were a little weak, but the chicken was okay. The potato chips were right. S&P futures still up 475. Dodgers up 51. I'm Tom Howie, Kevin O'Neill. Mr. Matt Weber will be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com, and that's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right
now. Hello, everybody. It's Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Kevin O'Neill, Mr. Matt Werber on the board. Well, this morning it looks like a great morning in the market. If we forgot about yesterday's trouncing. It looks great, but it's only a third of the way back. Actually, S&Ps are only a quarter of the way back. S&P futures up 950, which normally would be a good morning. Well, it is a good morning, except they were down 40 yesterday. Dow futures up 96, Nasdaq futures up 40. West Texas up 50 cents. 10-year yield is back up to 3.19. Over in Europe, we've got mixed bag. These guys have not really been jumped around like the rest of the world this week. They're down on the week, but not really as crazily volatile as we have been. DAX down 31.3%, FTSE up 15.2%, CAC down 38%. Great goings on over in China as they finally showed some concern for their stock market. The Chinese government stopped short and said they would interfere to the upside, but they definitely said they were concerned about it, so there's been a bounce back in the Shanghai. Nikkei down 126, over 0.6%. 22,532. Shanghai up 64, 2.5%. Remember, they were down like 75 yesterday, so 2550 is the number, which is still low. Hang Seng only up 106, but they weren't down that much either. 25561. There's been a split there between those two, which is, again, somewhat odd. A lot of odd stuff going on. Oil up 50 cents. Brent up 78 cents. So the spread is now a full $10.80. It's what else we've seen in a while. Natural gas 3.16. RBOB up 2 cents. 1.91. And last but not least, gold up a whole buck, 1231. Silver up 5 cents, 1466. A lot of information there. Matty, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Really quiet so far, Chief, on the area expressways. No issues at all on the Edens, Kennedy, Eisenhower, Stevenson, Southside expressways, suburban tollways, all quiet. Only issues we have are off the expressways. We have a crash in the city. It's a car versus a building. Usually the building wins those collisions. Grand Avenue and Pulaski has crews on the scene there, and that's causing some delays in that area. And then also at Archer and Damon on the south side, there is an accident as well. Everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, mild temperatures for the most part, but cloudy and could get some rain in the forecast as well. A high of 55. Right now it is mostly cloudy and 47 with rain later on today. For our Phoenix listeners, beautiful day, sunshine, high of 86. Right now it's clear and 61. In sports, the Bulls opened their season last night in Philadelphia without Chris Dunn, without Lauri Markkanen, and it showed. They were blown out by the Philadelphia 76ers, 127-108, so the Bulls are 0-1 on the young season.
A lot of defense, 127.
The Blackhawks, Chief, finally finished a game in regulation, their first one of the season. First five games all were overtime games. Not last night at home. They lost in the Stocks and Jocks Cup to the Arizona Coyotes. 4-1 was the final. Blown out in Corey Crawford's 2018 debut. Thursday Night Football was another blowout as the Broncos all over Arizona, 45-10, couple of defensive touchdowns, and every time you looked up, Denver was scoring and celebrating in the end zone, and they took care of business on Thursday Night Football. And lastly, the Red Sox are going to represent the American League in the World Series. They'll play the winner of the Brewers and Dodgers as they took care of business against Houston. 4-1 was the final last night. They won the series 4-1, and that's two straight years now that the World Series champion lost in the next year 4-1 in the LCS. The Cubs did the same thing when they lost to the Dodgers.
What the other guys playing Milwaukee tonight?
Correct.
And night tonight and tomorrow, if necessary?
If necessary, back in Milwaukee.
So that one's 3-2, correct?
Right.
There's a headline here regarding, by the way, Archer and Damon. What's kind of unusual about that? I haven't been there in a while. I think it's still there. It has to be like the oldest independent donut shop left, like, in the world. When was the last time you saw, like, an independent donut shop that wasn't like a Dunkin' Donuts or something?
Not very often, that's for sure. And now Dunkin' Donuts is trying to get rid of their donuts.
Well, and the donut name. It's
and the name.
Dunkin'.
Yeah.
That's kind of an odd name, Dunkin'.
We always call it Dunkin' anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
Or DD. Maybe that's why they're doing it.
Yeah, the one of the funniest things about getting rid of your name is B.F. Goodrich, years ago, Kevin. For those of you who know something about tires, you know that B.F. Goodrich obviously makes a lot of tires and so forth. And if you're off-road and they still have one of the, you know, one of the toughest tires you can buy and so forth. But B.F. Goodrich sold the tire business years and years ago, so they don't make the tires. Somebody else does under their name. So they spent, you know, how much does he spend to get, like, the best marketing firm in the world, Kevin, to spend 6 months researching what your new symbol should be on the New York Stock Exchange from BFG? And guess what happened after 6 months?
BFG.
They came back and said,
they changed it to BFD.
They came back and they said, you know what, why don't you just leave it the way it is? what do you figure that would cost? But, you know, but anyway, that's the way that...
Actually, I've been through that renaming process when I was at Bank in St. Joe, Michigan, and we bought into Indiana. You can't duplicate names, and there were banks in Indiana that already had the same name as we did, so we had to go through a change. It actually is kind of fun, because as you brainstorm all of that with your marketing firm, you come up with some really, really absurd things as part of the process, and it's kind of fun. So we did not land back on People's State Bank again, but it became Pinnacle Bank.
Pinnacle, that's a good one. The top. You guys are the top, you know.
The tops were the Mona Lisa. Where the tops were the power of pizza.
Was it there? You could be the four tops. You know,
yes, we could be the four tops.
I talked to Lou yesterday more about what we were talking on Wednesday regarding the Kansas situation, and I just a comment. On the one hand, you know, there's going to be a lot of disagreement. I mean, obviously there's some fraud and there's money flying around, and there's people who would say, well, you know, these guys are crooks in the meantime and are taking advantage of some of the kids and so forth. And I don't necessarily, I'm not going to argue any of that, Kevin. I just, there's always like, and I think people who listen to the show probably do, one of the reasons is I always try and point out the chess game is really not the chess game that we play as kids, or not as kids, but people even play as adults and are really good at it. It's like the chess game on Star Trek, where there's three different levels. There's always something going on where, like, you can, if you ask somebody, should Rod Blagojevich have been tried twice with that much fanfare, and, you know, should he be in jail, and should they have tried him, you know, excoriated the juror, and had the poor guy, you know, not that I'm a fan, had the poor guy have to use essentially a public defender in a second trial, those kinds of things that people, you're going to get a significant part of the population that says, pounds the table and says, absolutely yes, this was, this needs to be an example. Of course, as anybody after that is, you know, is learned by the example, that's, who knows, but there's going to be all kinds of people that pound the table, yes. Yet if you ask them on a blackboard on the other side of the room, it appears to us that for a period of 5 years, some percentage, 50, 60, 70, 75 of the entire budget of the FBI's Chicago office, or whoever the hell does that investigation, went towards this trial. And in the meantime, a firm like Matty Weber's firm or other people like that have learned of the dramatic increase of online stealing of you know, stuff out of people's accounts, and you know, the Visa card stuff where people run into places and putting the magnetic strip and stealing your stuff. There was virtually nobody for 5 years to look at any of that, and look at how that has expanded by tenfold. Well, if you ask the question like that, maybe Rod Blagojevich going to jail doesn't seem so important, does it? I mean, there's always different ways to ask the same question, isn't there, Kevin? It seems.
Well, sure there are, and in the case of the this trial, you know, I think the stuff with the apparel companies in this case, this particular trial is Adidas. It's a little bit of a reach on on the charges, but I will say that the interesting part of the trial is that the defense is you can't defraud a school that is a willing participant in the scam. So in that case, you know, there's a lot of exposure that's coming out because they have, like, the text messages with Bill Self.
Well, and you have to ask yourself, bluntly, how can Adidas give a huge bonus to the coach in the school and not the player? You need all three to get them on the field, right?
I mean, it's the system as specified, and we've talked about this plenty of times, it's a bad business model. It's an unfair business model from the labor standpoint. So, you know, so we all understand that. And on the my problem never has been that the players accept payments. It's that the grown-ups who agree to the rules, who make the rules and agree to them, then go ahead and turn around and violate them.
Well, you know, yeah, that is.
Those are not good people.
Well, but there are, but I'm going to say, Kevin, and first of all, I'm not going to disagree with you, but I'm going to say that on the trading floor, and since there hasn't been one for a while, we're way beyond the statute of limitations. There always were firms and a few people, but mostly firms, that absolutely abused the rules. But because of their size, everybody was afraid to spank them, and they were able to do whatever they wanted. And for periods of long periods of time, there's firms that are household names now that I remember how they started, when they started, and how they started, and how they got big. And I'm not going to blurt it all out on the air because I don't really have any evidence that is good 15 years later. But everybody who hears me say it that was there will agree with me. But there's always the person. I mean, you're not cheating. You're not. I mean, go back to the New York Knicks where they were smaller, so they used to what? Instead of 12 pounds of pressure in a ball, they'd have 10 and a half or something, so it wouldn't bounce. I mean, everybody, some people think that's terrific if you're the one guy who can get away with it.
And
if you're not cheating, you're not trying.
It's a shame that we've developed a mindset like that.
Yeah, but do you think, I mean, well, you've never met him, but my Slats Grabnik of college sports, Beldo, I mean, because either win with thugs or you lose two thugs. I mean, he's not all wrong, Kevin. I mean, right? I don't.
He's not all wrong. I still want to believe that you don't have to do it that way.
I think that Notre Dame, Stanford, Northwestern would have an awful lot to offer, and there's an awful lot of really good football players around. I think you can stay above the snapping alligators and be straight. I'm not so sure that other places can do that.
Well, and that sort of brings us to the yesterday's development in college basketball, and that is that now the NBA is going to allow elite high school players, and I'm dying to see how they come up with the determination of who's elite.
Well, they're going to say the top 100, but who makes the call, right?
Yeah, that's totally up in the air as far as I'm concerned, and we can't even begin to discuss that until we see what their criteria turn out to be. But it'll be a $125,000 contract. It appears to me, from what I've read, that they are still not draft eligible, so it would just be players going out of high school, signing with the NBA's G League teams, getting paid, you know, what we have seen as kind of the market for college basketball recruits. I don't see anything that would prevent them from having an apparel contract or a shoe contract over and above that 125, so it could turn out to be far more lucrative than that for some of these athletes. And then after a year in the G League, they become draft eligible. Now, this I think is a good turn because the worst of the corruption is around these kinds of players.
Right.
So now, if you want to get paid, you have a pathway. If you don't want to get paid, then you can go to college. As it turns out, this is 45 of the five-star recruits, you know, the guys that are the highest-rated recruits, 45% of them and 58% of all the one-and-done players have gone to just five schools.
That is scary.
You know, so that's the concentration. So that's, you know, they're not listed. This is from Mitch Daniels sending a letter to Condoleezza Rice when they formed this commission to evaluate college basketball. And he just stopped there, but you can name them. It's Duke, it's Kentucky, it's Kansas, it's Arizona. I don't know who the fifth school is. I'd have to think about
that. It had to be Memphis State for a while.
But Calipari's at Kentucky now. So
you never would have guessed Duke.
North Carolina?
Yeah, probably North Carolina.
You would never have guessed Duke 20 years ago, would you? Krzyzewski had such a cachet, and now he's as bad as anybody.
Right. He's totally sold out to the one-and-done model. And now what's going to be interesting about this is, okay, does that just mean that these guys are going to get the lion's share of the four-star guys because most of the five-star guys are going to go play professionally? Could be, but it's also possible that some of these guys are renowned coaches, not because they're great coaches, but because they accumulate the most talent, sometimes honestly, sometimes dishonestly. But it's always been my theory that so many college basketball coaches wash out in the NBA because in college they won because they had superior talent, and in the NBA it's pretty hard to accumulate superior talent.
You know who said that? My buddy, who's now deceased, by the way, Tom Tracy, was a big star at DePaul. He probably would be 68, 69 now, so it was a long time ago. Tom once goes to one of these basketball camps when he was in college, right? And this had to be, I'm going to say he graduated in 70, so it was a while ago. And so some guy gets out there, and they got the blackboard, you know, back this, how long it was. And the guy's got all these plays and these X's and O's all over the board. And he leaves, and this other coach, the legendary coach from Arkansas, whatever the hell the guy's name was, walks in the big draw. Oh, boys!
Eddie Sutton, yeah.
Let me tell you, this is all well and good, but what really counts is who are the X's and who are the O's. So I think you're right about that, Kevin. My question is, why do people always have to, if there's 100 slots, why does somebody have to say they're premier guys? Why not let the NBA figure out who the 100 best guys are? They're going to do it. They're not going to sign you and me.
Well, why does it have to? It is the NBA who's going to determine that. So this is the NBA's rule, not a college rule. So it is an accommodation by the NBA, and I'm sure this has been that they've been working with the NCAA to do this as outgrowth of this commission recommendation. They have to go play in the G League. And so how they decide who's going to be eligible, I don't know, but it's not going to be three-star people because the NBA also has an interest in having that fringe talent that is available to help fill out rosters. And so they don't want to make this totally a minor league, at least not yet. They want to make it an extension of the NBA team's rosters.
All right, so Kevin, if I was going to take my economic knowledge, and even it's not a nice Friday morning with the market up, if I wanted to be something that maybe rhymes with Rick, I'm going to say the price for a college to get one of these guys is now $150,000.
I was just going to say the same
thing. Or $200,000, yeah.
Yeah.
So
well,
Sean Miller and Bill Self.
It may be.
Yeah.
It may very well be, but if they think that they're going to be ineligible versus, and frankly, a lot of guys who are going to do the one-and-done game aren't slightest bit interested in the school part of it. And because they have made the progress rather than the degree, they've made the progress part of it, it hurts your program if a guy comes in, doesn't go to class at all, fails every course, and then moves on. That actually hurts a program.
How does it hurt it? How does it hurt it?
It hurts them because they become ineligible for the postseason when the total progress number is too low. For instance, it was a few years back, Connecticut was the defending national champions. They couldn't even go to the tournament the following year.
So it's happened, like, once?
Oh, no, there's teams every year who are ineligible for postseason.
So if you get somebody, and
usually not the high profile, but for instance, Kentucky really had to go clean that up. It used to be that you could go the first semester and then blow off the second semester. You enroll, you don't show up, because so what? By the time your second semester grades are in, you're on your way to the NBA.
Now, the
school and the program have an interest in those guys finishing their coursework.
If you bleep up the first semester or quarter so bad you're under 2.0, are you still ineligible the second semester, or is that gone by way of the dodo bird?
No, it hasn't gone by the way wayside. I think it partly is up to individual schools, and it partly is a function of what the NCAA minimums are. But you have to do, you know, a minimum. Now, you know, are there classes where they can make it easier for people? Yeah, we know that at North Carolina, don't we?
I'm not going to accuse them hour by hour, but even at your, let's pick a Notre Dame who likes to think they're above it all. Even at your Notre Dames and your Northwesterns, if you want, and you get a couple guys off Matty Weber's basketball team that are 5-star recruits and don't do much about class, you can bring them there in June, have them do 2 classes in the summer to get acclimated, and maybe those classes are writing or something where you're teaching somebody how to write, which they probably don't. I mean, white or black, a lot of people don't know how to write now. So you give them a couple of classes in the summer that A, are classes. They're not physics, but they're not awful either. You get somebody acclimated to college. You get somebody what's expected of you, how to write a paper, blah blah blah. At least make it a stab at it. You take 9 hours in the fall to keep your, which is the minimum for eligibility, is back in the semester system, and maybe another 9 in the second thing, and now you start again the next summer. That's a lot different, I think, Kevin, than when Sammy Puckett was the same year as me at Notre Dame, and he came out of Hales Franciscan, which, you know, was a Catholic
school.
Not a bad school. And he was spectacular. I mean, he was the only guy in a team that could give Austin Carr a game, and he was a freshman. He was the who's the guy that was the Detroit guy, Indiana, Detroit, and he's been a general manager all over the place.
Oh, Isaiah Thomas.
He was the Isaiah Thomas, the guy who was 5'10 and a half that could, you know, dunk with both hands and the whole bit. And he comes and he lands at Notre Dame, he gets like 5 Fs and he's gone. I bet the guy's not even alive now. I mean, and he's in the Chicago Basketball Hall of Fame. I mean, the shock of landing in class with 5 classes the day after Labor Day, that doesn't happen now, I don't think.
Yeah, and most, especially the public universities, most of them have bridge programs for the summer, and it's for just that reason. People who aren't well prepared for college, that can be, and then so they have the remedial coursework available for them.
I mean, can you imagine? I mean, even out of Hales, that guy dropping into class the day after Labor Day, having 5 classes the first day, and going, "What the hell am I doing here?" Even in the lowest end stuff. I mean, but now I think it's a lot makes more sense. I mean, I don't have a problem with somebody easing their as long as somebody's not maybe naturally as bright or just had the wrong education. I have no problem if they're willing to do the work, Kevin. Give them a tutor all summer. No, that's not how you punctuate the sentence. As long as they're willing to listen, as long as they're willing to get better, I have no problem with that. I never have. And I don't think you do either.
Nope.
It's the guy
nope,
who says, I
want don't. To. And so, you know, there will be some who will opt for that direction because that's what they want to do. And good, because, you know, you get a lot of, especially from the Chicago public schools as an example, you get a lot of people who would be first generation college, and that's a big deal to the family. It won't be every 5-star. There will be some who will choose other options. It'll be interesting to see how this shakes out. It'll be interesting to see how it affects those one and done oriented programs.
We got a tweet here asking, isn't it also true that a school can lose scholarships if they have kids that don't finish the 4 years? So to many, one and done, it eventually catches up to the Kentuckys of the world?
No, that's been proposed a lot. It has not happened to my knowledge, anyway.
I'm not so sure it's happened yet.
The one and done, I don't have a problem with people leaving school with eligibility left because anybody should be able to do that. If you have the ability to go to work and make a lot of money, I don't have a problem with that. I expect them to be educated while they're there. Now, there should be other reasons that you lose scholarships. And, you know, I think in addition to losing your postseason eligibility, it would be kind of sweet if you get a limited number of scholarships when you can't manage to score a not so difficult hurdle to clear for the academic progress reporting.
Yeah, you would hope, Manny, that if the baseball player who gets drafted after 3 years and goes and plays baseball and then decides 2 years later to go back to school, that the first day his professor didn't say, where did you go to school for 3 years? The lakefront? where they could tell you'd been in a classroom before you would hope. I mean, right?
That's right.
I'm just saying. I think most of the baseball players come back. You don't know the answer to that, but I mean, I think a lot of guys do, don't they?
I don't think they do.
You know, baseball's tough because the seasons overlap, so it's difficult. Frankly, I see more basketball players coming back for summertime than anything else. Some football players, but that's generally after career is over.
Well, Manny, if you do the summers, you could be only a couple of courses away after your junior year. I mean, it shouldn't be like, I mean, why wouldn't you after going through all that? If you need a couple of courses to graduate, why wouldn't you? I mean, Kevin, we have to let you go, buddy. We'll talk to you next week. Have a nice weekend. No game to watch. Come back with Mr. William Cohan, who obviously we've had on the show before. We're going to talk a little about the Sears bankruptcy. Bill has done an amazing amount on this one, and we've talked about it years ago and through the show, but I don't know if anybody knows more about it than Bill, so this will be a lot of fun. S&P futures up 950. Dow futures up 96. We're back a quarter of the way from yesterday, so it's something. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Blown up by Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Hounding, Mr. Matt Weber. The board S&P futures now up 11, Dow up 112, NASDAQ up 47. It sounds all terrific, and it is, but certainly we're back maybe a quarter of yesterday. We were down. Yesterday was ugly. We came back a little bit on the close, but still ugly. China's came out this morning. Their growth, GDP, is only 5.5%, which is very low for them, and later in the show I'll go into why that is. That number seems high to us, but it's actually very low to them because they're still much more of a developing economy than we are. And it's all a question of how you count. But now we have Mr. William Cohen. We'd much rather talk to him than talk about some some esoteric economic lesson that I'll bore the hell out of everybody with. So Mr. Cohen, thank you for saving everybody from me. How are you?
Great. Thank you for having me back.
You really perked my ear up when you're writing about this Sears debacle, because obviously in Chicago we're very tied with Sears, and I knew people that worked there and were very successful. Even I'm talking 50 years ago, my aunt worked there and had to stock and the whole bit, and it was the Home Depot of its era and everything else. And Eddie Lambert gets there, and Mr. Cramer did nothing but tell everybody in the world about how you got to go with this guy because he's so brilliant. We don't care if we sell those stinking shirts; we're going to make money in real estate and everything else. And then turns out the thing went all the way down a rat hole, and you seem to have written about it and have a pretty good clue. So how's that for a lead-in, bud?
Well, thank you. That's pretty great. Well, look, I had written a piece in Vanity Fair about Eddie earlier this year where he gave me one of the rare interviews. Now he's talking to everybody, but he'd been pretty quiet for about 15 years. It's a bittersweet story because this is a guy who, of course, as I said in the Times the other day, is sort of smarter than any guy in any room you're ever going to go into. He's a very smart guy. He's made a lot of money as a hedge fund manager. He made a lot of money making smart bets on other retail plays. He bought the bonds of Kmart while it was in bankruptcy, and then got a controlling stake in the company in 2004. The next year, he decided to merge it with Sears and create Sears Holding. And so he's basically owned this thing for 13 years, which is a very long time for any kind of investor. But he thought of himself as sort of the next Warren Buffett, and he just stuck with it and through thick and thin, and that's the sort of bittersweet part of the story, because most hedge fund managers would have cut their losses long ago and run away, but not Eddie.
I'm going to, do you mind if I push back just a hair on the bankruptcy
push
thing?
Push back?
Yeah, just a hair, just a hair, just a hair, you don't mind?
Not at all.
The bankruptcy thing, I'm going to say you're a pretty smart guy, and so am I, so is Matty. Give us Goldman's money, and the way these bankruptcies drop down, it's an old Goldman trick to buy the bonds that are 10 cents on the buck, and the bankruptcy judge for some reason gives that person a seat at the table. It happened in the United bankruptcy. It happened in, what the hell, another one here in Chicago, where somebody went in and got themselves a seat at the table and ended up with all a lot of the new stock and everything. It's more of a, I guess I don't know, I'm going to say it's 80% who you grew up with and having money at your disposal and say 20% genius, if that's a fair statement.
All right, now I'm going to push back a little bit.
Feel free. I love it. I love it.
You know, I did a lot of restructuring work and bankruptcy work when I was a banker. And, you know, the only way you get a seat at the table in one of these bankruptcies is if you are, you know, a creditor.
Right.
Look, what Eddie figured out early on is that Sears was going to go down the tubes, that his strategy for sort of not paying attention to the stores and the merchandise and the inventory, which he chose not to do because he, quote-unquote, didn't get a return on his investment when he did focus on that, and to try to focus on building up the online business of Sears and try to make it a competitor of Amazon when really that couldn't happen. So he engaged in a myriad of financial engineering moves, one of which was to become one of the largest creditors of Sears. Now, he did not have to do that. He is obviously the largest equity holder in Sears, more than 60% of the equity, and he'd, you know, ridden that thing up to like $120 a share and down to pennies. He also decided along the way to become one of the largest creditors of Sears, which basically guaranteed him a chance to buy Sears again or to own Sears again after a bankruptcy process. And that's what he's just decided to do, is to put it into bankruptcy. And we'll see how it all comes out. In bankruptcy, you know, you have to have agreements from other creditors. You have to be the highest bidder. You have to have it approved by the judge. So there's many steps that need to take place before Eddie ends up owning it again. But he's positioned himself to own it again. Now, you got to wonder, most hedge fund guys would not have held on to this thing for 13 years. And I'm not defending him. I'm just explaining what he did. I mean, he decided to become a true believer in Sears Holding and Kmart and all the various financial engineering steps that he could do to try to make money out of here. Now, he told me many times that he did this because he was trying to save jobs and to save pensions and all of those things, which is sort of noble, but obviously hundreds of thousands of jobs were lost. Many, many stores have been closed. I think he did a fair job, and it remains to be seen with people's pensions. He did put a lot of money into the pension plan. Now it becomes the aegis of the Pension Benefit Guarantee Board, or PBGC, in bankruptcy, and of course that'll be a big focus of whether he treats his Sears pensioners properly. But the guy, decided to use every financial engineering trick in the world that he learned at Goldman and working for Richard Rainwater and on his own, and it didn't work out.
Well, it seems like there's kind of iterations of this in the sense that when I was real young, you had they used to call them conglomerates, but now the companies are so big you don't need to be a conglomerate. The company's bigger than conglomerates used to be. The Harold Janine was one of those guys. You know, I can manage anything. I don't care what it is. I'm just a manager. And then I don't know why, what caused those guys to go south. When I first started on the trading floor, it was LTV, it was Litton Industries, it was a few others. They just kept grabbing people, and it looked like they were like the Pac-Man machine. It was just going to keep eating everything. And then all of a sudden, they kind of reached a spot where they didn't either. Now, this is kind of like the third iteration. This guy, what percentage, I mean, coming from the Chicago area, obviously, and Sears, God, I grew up with Sears. Bill, you couldn't go from the first floor on 62nd and Western down to the hardware part in the basement and walk past that hot dog thing with the big root beer thing and not get a hot dog. I don't care who you were. It smelled so good, you had to grab one, right? But the Chicago stores were in the blue-collar neighborhoods, and they were huge stores. The one you can see from the Skyway, the thing's got to be 3 or 4 square blocks. With autos, with everything, you name it. But that was positioned a mile from U.S. Steel Southworks, which was a, 24-hour, 7-day-a-week plant with thousands of people working there. I mean, That Sears store had to be the biggest in the country, for God's sake. I mean, the one in Marquette Park had to be close to it. Now, those places, the demographics, there's nothing there. Yet, when you go to places in Wisconsin, and you go to some of these small towns, Kmart was there way ahead of Walmart, and the town's not big enough for two stores like that. And Kmart rules the roost. Everybody goes to Kmart for everything. I mean, there's got to be some, like, really good places that the Democrats favored them, and then bad places. I mean, it's hard for me to get my hands around the whole thing. I mean, it seems like you have a better view. Did it have to go under? I mean, not have to go under? I mean, I can't tell. From Chicago's end of it, it looks like, you know, they were in the wrong spots. But other places, it looks like they were in the right spot. I can't get my hands around it.
Well, they were in a lot of spots. They had a lot of big stores on the malls. It was part of Eddie's strategy. He decided, you know what, I'm not going to try to compete with Walmart. I'm going to try to be complementary to Walmart, because that's everybody's going to Walmart, so I'm going to put my stores, if I can, near the Walmart, because, you know, maybe I'll get some runoff. Yeah. You know, in its day, as we all know, Sears was literally the Amazon of its time, right? I mean, who didn't grow up with that Sears catalog? If you did not live in a city, you know, where there was a Sears store, I mean, the way you got things was by going through that catalog, ordering them, and having them shipped to you, and it was like a miracle. And it's just like, you know, we talk about kind of Amazon today. You just go to the website, you click, and next thing you know, a drone delivers your, you know, your toilet paper or something. I mean, it's that same kind of transformative miracle, and Sears was the first one. And you know, Goldman Sachs, Sears was the first company that Goldman Sachs took public. You know, there's an incredibly rich history. And of course, you know, the Sears Tower in Chicago is a monument. Now, of course, it's not called the Sears Tower anymore, but you know, that was a monument. It was the tallest building in the world at one point. I mean, it was a monument to Sears. But obviously, Amazon has proved to be very disruptive to not only Sears as a retailer, but retailers all over the country. Did Eddie mismanage it? Yes, he did. It just is a fact. He tried to be a remote manager from Florida when the headquarters was in Chicago area. You know, you have to walk the stores when you're a retailer. Eddie's not a retailer. He's a Wall Street arbitrageur / hedge fund manager / financial engineer. He made a lot of money owning retailers, Auto Nation, AutoZone. He thought that because he'd made a lot of money owning the stocks of these other retailers and engaging in financial engineering, that he was a retailer. But he wasn't a retailer. And I think that was his blind spot. That was his Achilles heel. You know, you got to give him credit for sticking with it for 15 years when most people, hedge fund managers would not. But this is sort of where he got into his Warren Buffett-like complex, where he thought, you know, like Warren Buffett buys and holds. He thought if he wanted to be like Warren Buffett, he had to buy and hold. But he just didn't have the right management. He then appointed himself as the CEO in 2013 and ran it for the last 5 years and literally ran it into the ground.
Bill, I've read some stuff on Sears that I think it complements what you're saying, and I wonder if I'm sure you have read the same stuff, but I'd like your opinion on it. Was Sears offices, their headquarters used to be, I'm going to guess, Maddie might want to look this up, I'm going to say Cicero and like the north side, Cicero and like Fulton, somewhere in Armitage maybe. And as a matter of fact, they couldn't sell it for like 20 years. It was still there after they were in Sears Tower. And the idea was that you had people that were your purchasers and everything were from the blue collar neighborhoods that they essentially serviced. And they, people owned bass boats. The bass boat catalog was better than anybody else's bass boat catalog because the people doing it were guys that owned bass. So, and then when they moved downtown, it wasn't so bad because most of those people came with, because the public transportation in Chicago is good enough, certainly from the west side downtown, to where you didn't need a car or anything. But once you moved to Hoffman Estates, and I, by the way, know the attorney that got him out there, all of a sudden you have totally different buyers. You've totally lost track of your clientele. And this is not even on the financial side. This is on the purchasing side. That all of a sudden you're still trying to essentially be the retailer to middle America, and now all of a sudden everybody, most of the people didn't go with because you needed a car. There's no way you're commuting from downtown to Hoffman Estates. And maybe they didn't even want those people. They wanted new people, but who the hell were the new people? But they totally lost their way company-wide from top to bottom, not just with the CEO in Florida, but the people doing the buying never used Sears stuff. You get some lady from Hoffman Estates buying a flannel shirt that her husband never wore, type of thing. You know what I'm saying? I mean, is that possible, too, that it wasn't just the top, it was all the way through the place?
Well, I think that is obviously possible. It's more than possible. It's probable. You know, you go into a Kmart or Sears store, unfortunately, in the last few years, they weren't particularly clean. They weren't particularly well merchandised. They weren't particularly set up well. The inventory was not there. It was not a great shopping experience. And, you know, if you're going to compete with online retailing, which is obviously a huge bonanza, you know, you have to have, you know, sort of expert retailers. You have to walk the stores. You have to make sure it's a great experience for the customer. And, you know, by the way, it's not just Sears is struggling. A lot of big retailers are struggling. You know, Federated and Macy's and all that are struggling to some extent, too. But, you know, I think Eddie made it worse by being remote, by putting himself as the CEO when he was not a retailer, by, you know, essentially, you know, carving up all of the assets of the company and spinning them off and selling them basically to himself and his friends like Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, and sort of strip mining the assets of the company. Again, he could have walked away long ago. He could have sold his stock at near the peak. He could have merged the company. He could have done all sorts of things that if he was just purely financially focused and just wanted to make as much money as he could. I mean, his net worth took a big hit. He's still a billionaire, but he's not a four-billionaire. He's now down to, like, a one-billionaire. We're not going to feel sorry for him. But he, you know, he really took it in the shorts in this investment in a way, you know, not unlike, you know, Bill Ackman and Valiant. You know, Bill Ackman stuck with Valiant and lost $4 billion. Eddie Lampert stuck with Sears and lost, you know, $2 or $3 billion. We're not sure how it's going to come out yet because he's got a chance to re-own the thing in bankruptcy. But, you know, sometimes you got to ask yourself with these hedge fund managers, what are they thinking? I mean,
well, Bill, how hard is it? Just I don't mean, I somehow or another, I don't know why I get like this, but I like to look at things at kind of the base level. And Walmart went through this for a while. People were basically bitching at a lot of the shelves. How hard is it when the store is bigger than downtown of a city, for God's sake, to have every single shelf full, the place looking clean? I mean, forget that's got to be an amazing undertaking when the places are that big. They have every aisle look correct. Everything. I mean, what's the place on Elston, Manny? The Target here in Chicago. An average Target does a truckload and a half a day, from what I understand, Bill, from people I talk to at Target. This place does 4.5. And you walk in there, the amount of effort. If they have a sale on Tide, the entire aisle is cleaned out. It's like a Russian store. And they have people trying to, I mean, to keep these places with the amount of people coming in there and the amount of volume, to keep them looking good and stacked, man, I don't know. That manager has to be Harry Houdini. It's got to be really, really hard to do, isn't it?
Of course it is. And people, they make it look easy because that's what they're supposed to do. But being a good retailer, inventory management, getting, you know, making your turns, keeping your suppliers happy, you know, managing it all, figuring out where everything is, avoiding shrinkage, you know, people stealing from you. I mean, all of those things, keeping the merchandise fresh and new and looking great. And, you know, it was hard enough before the Internet era. Now it's even harder because people don't even have to get up and go to the store anymore. And shipping is free, by and large. And, you know, Eddie, to his credit, you know, saw that relatively early on, how important Internet, you know, retailing would be, and tried to make Sears into a Internet retailer. But he was either too early or chose the wrong approach, or his clientele wasn't particularly interested in buying things online at that point. And he just, you know, completely lost it to Amazon. You know, it's incredibly hard to be a good retailer. I have incredible admiration for the people who do it well, and there are people who do it well. You know, Eddie Lampert is not a retailer. He's an investment banker. He's a hedge fund manager. He got his first job out of Yale at Goldman Sachs because his roommate was Steve Mnuchin, and Steve Mnuchin's father, Robert Mnuchin, was one of the big partners at Goldman Sachs. So, you know, this is where the hubris comes in.
Roommate where? Not a roommate in Northern Illinois, I don't imagine. Where was?
No, Yale.
Imagine that.
Yeah, you've heard of Yale. You know there's Supreme Court justices.
Yeah, we got
Yale,
some of those judges kind of in there. The fiasco with getting rid of the catalog and then buying Land's End, that was before him, wasn't it?
That was before him, and he spun off Land's End to himself, essentially.
Yeah.
He's the largest shareholder of Land's End. He's probably got more value in Land's End than he does in Sears. I mean, and that was just one example. I mean, he spun off, he created something called Seritage, which is a real estate investment trust that owns, many of the Sears stores and locations that have been repurposed for other retailers. They're not Sears anymore, and he's refurbished them, and he and Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, who own Seritage, have made a lot of money off that. So he's carved up, and that's just one of the things he did, but of course he bankrupted Sears Canada. I think there was like Old Orchard stores or something that he also didn't go well. I mean, he's basically carved this thing and financially engineered this thing every which way. I mean, if you dig into it a little bit, you just can't even be, you have to, your jaw has to drop to see all the things that Eddie Lampert did along the way when no one was really paying attention. The question is, where was the board? And, of course, the board was in his pocket and let him do all these things. Now, he'll say that he did it all at arm's length. And then he had, special committees, et cetera, and that's probably all true, because that's the way you have to do things. But, he always had the votes. He always had the control.
Well, I got one more question on Sears, and I got to ask you about the general market, because I know you know a lot more stuff than just Sears. I know you don't want to answer this. How does a firm that 100 and some years ago decides that they're going to let people shop in the store without being in the store via catalog, which is the only way they could do at the time, not realize that was going to be something that went on forever, and it just happened to turn from catalog to internet? How could you lose your way when you were so far in front of the pack?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the biggest mysteries of Sears, and I'm sure that has to get back to, the management at the time that those changes at the internet was, coming to be a reality. I mean, now we see internet retailing is obvious and a given, right? But,
yep.
Back in 98, 99, 2000, when it was sort of just coming to the fore, I mean, people didn't trust it. I mean, why am I going to give my credit card to some, computer some screen that I see? I mean, took a while for people to come around to realize that it was safe and it was good and you can get what you wanted and return things easily. It was not so obvious along the way. And, I think to his credit, Eddie saw some of those things first because he's a smart guy. And I'm sure he knew Jeff Bezos, his fellow hedge fund manager, but I don't think he executed it well. Maybe his clientele wasn't ready for it.
I have a real stupid question, Bill, and then I'm going to ask you about the market. We have a couple of minutes. If somebody sent in an order in the catalog, I suppose you could have called it in, but if you sent in an order in the catalog from, bum whatever, Iowa, into Sears, and you 2 weeks later you got your Craftsman wrench and your blue jeans, did you send a check with the order, or how did you pay for it?
I mean, I assume they had some forms of credit cards back then.
Sears always had a credit card, yeah.
Yeah, or a check, sure.
You just send a check with it, okay.
Yeah.
All right, what about, I was going to ask you, what about the market? We're trying to beat up on China, thinking it's good for us. We've got interest rates creeping up, and we've got a lot of stuff going on in the world with Saudi and other places. We've got a little bit of a sell-off. Does it keep going, or are we going to go to 4.5% on these rates, or what are we doing?
Well, the interest rates are definitely going up. They were... completely risk was being mispriced for 10 years after the financial crisis. So this is healthy. I know Trump doesn't like it, but I think the correction is healthy. I think interest rates going up to meet, so supply of money can meet demand for money, and risk can be mispriced properly is all good and healthy. Does that lead to a correction of a market that's clearly overblown, both on the debt and equity side, and has been for years. Absolutely. Does it hurt if you're a long stock investor to see the market go down after reaching new highs? Sure. We saw this in February after the January high, and it came back. And I think this is like a steam locomotive, letting off some steam in an overheated engine room. And I think it's very healthy, and investors just have to take it in stride. Are these companies going away? I mean, with the tax rate being this low, this is like the greatest, boom. Trump has made it possible for companies to make more money than ever before. And so I don't really see any of that changing. The stocks are not the same as the economy. Economy seems to be okay, and the stock market gets ahead of itself, and so corrections are very healthy, and I think that's what we have here.
Why, Bill, do you think that they never changed the piece of the tax law where if you buy a Matt Weber company at 100 and it goes to 200, you got to pay tax on the whole 200, a whole 100. If the poor guy who buys it at 200, interest rates go up, and then he sells it at 100, he can only go 3,000 a year. That's why I'm always really concerned when we go up and we go down, because people lose more on the downside than they made on the upside. And if you're not in the industry, you don't get that. I suspect you get that.
People also wonder why, if you inherit a bunch of stock from your parent or whatever, you inherit, the basis becomes the market value at the time you inherit. And therefore, you don't, if your parent bought a stock at $5 and you inherited $100, you inherit the $100 basis, and then if you sell it for $105, you pay the capital gains on the $5 and not the difference between what your mother or father bought it for and what you sold it for. The tax code is arcane and strange, and it favors capital over labor and has for a long time, and that's my question. Why does capital get taxed at a lower rate than labor? Why are we favoring capital over labor? That's just the way it is, and so no wonder people, maybe it helps job creation, it helps new business formation, and people are willing to risk their capital because they get a tax benefit.
It could be very simple, Bill, that neither you or I are welcome in that room where that debate is being had.
That's for sure.
But hey, we got to have you back more often, buddy. It's been too long. I really enjoyed it because I learned a lot, and I hope the listeners did too. And by the way, we're going to tweet out your article, and we'll have you back, buddy. S&P futures up 11, Dow futures up 120, NASDAQ futures up 47. That was fun. Oil up 70 cents. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456, or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments.
You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello, everybody. Stocks and jocks. I'm Tom Holland. Just put a word over the board. Mr. Jan Neal in a second. S&P futures up 10 now. Dow futures up 105. NASDAQ futures up 42. They've been right about this level, plus or minus a couple of bucks since we came in. Mostly a little higher. We're trying to bounce back from yesterday's 300-point loss, and more importantly, 40 points on the S&P. So being up 10 or 11 or 12 is a nice start, but it's not anywhere near toward yesterday morning. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 9 only. 0.1%. These guys are down yesterday. FTSE up 35. It's 0.5%. That's a little bit of a move. CAC around down 23. So kind of mixed over there, slightly up. Asia, here's the story of the day. Chinese growth came in at only 6.5%, which is really low for them. And they made some utterances about saying that they're concerned about the market. They stopped short of saying they were going to support it. They did say they were concerned about it. So Nikkei's down 126.
That was nice of them.
Yeah. Well, they have supported before. Remember we went through the routine about you couldn't sell short. They arrested the short sellers and all that crap a few years ago. I mean, they got stuff in their quiver. Nikkei down 126.5%. Shanghai up 64, 2.5%, but they're still down on the week pretty heavy. Hang Seng up 106.4. We've got West Texas up 70 cents, Brent up 88. So that spread is now well over 10 bucks. It's like 69.35 and 80.17. So we're talking $10 and almost 11, $10.90, which is about as high as I've ever seen it. Gold up 290 now, 1233. Silver up 12 cents. Pretty good move in silver. It's almost 1%. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have one significant crash in the area right now on a Friday morning, and that's on the Eisenhower outbound side just before Grand Avenue. We have a crash that's now been moved to the left shoulder, but that's causing delays on I-290 on the outbound side. Other than that, it's a typical Friday morning traffic, lighter than Monday through Thursday on the Edens and Kennedy. The same with the Eisenhower, with the exception of the outbound side out near Grand, as I mentioned. Stevenson looks okay. We had an earlier crash this morning on I-57 where all lanes were blocked earlier this morning, but that's all clear. No issues remaining from that. Same with the Bishop Ford and the Dan Ryan. Out in the suburbs, Hanover Park, Lake Street, which is US 20, just west of 290 at Barrington Road, there is a crash that's causing delays. And then it looks like to the north of that, Route 53, which is in Long Grove at Schaefer Road, there is a crash as well. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today will be mostly cloudy. We'll have some rain in the forecast later on this morning, but shouldn't affect your morning commute. A high of 55. Right now it's mostly cloudy and 48 degrees. Still dry, going up to a rainy 55.
For our Phoenix listeners, beautiful day for John and the folks in the Valley of the Sun. Sunny with a high of 86. Right now it's clear and 62. In sports, Bulls open their NBA 2018-2019 campaign with a blowout loss in Philadelphia, 127-108. Sox and Jocks Cup, NHL style, it was the Blackhawks losing to the Coyotes at the United Center 4-1. It was the Hawks' first game that didn't go to overtime, six games into the season. Thursday night football, the Arizona Cardinals were blown out by Denver, 45-10. And we have one half of our World Series as the Red Sox win the American League. They took care of business against the Astros, winning that series 4-1 after a 4-1 win last night in Houston. Milwaukee and L.A. return to action tonight. Dodgers lead the Brewers 3-2.
Chief. Anybody do anything fantasy-wise last night in San Diego?
You mean between the Denver and Arizona?
Yeah, Denver, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Emmanuel Sanders, the wide receiver for Denver, had a huge game. And, of course, he's on Thomas's team. So I was having a couple drinks with Thomas last night, and he was very excited, as you can imagine. Yeah. And he talked about it a lot.
I can't imagine it. It's just, I
mean, it was almost unbearable.
Yes. Did I tell you that that's my guy? By the way, did I tell you that that's my guy? John, did you know this guy was Thomas's guy? You know, I have a question. I was reading yesterday. And John, you're a little closer to this, being from the West. I guess this, I'll be crude here, this move of San Diego to L.A. is so far the equivalent of a fart in church.
Oh, it's hilarious. No one goes to their games.
They're playing at some soccer stadium or something?
Yeah, no one goes to their games, no one cares. And they're a good team, too, this year.
Yeah.
And every home game, it's half the stands are the visiting team.
They've cut their... revenue forecast by like 60% for the next couple of years. It's unbelievable. Then they're going to share a stadium with the Rams after it's all done out in Inglewood or something.
I guess. By the way, we got a couple of tweets for you and John. First of all, regarding the William Cohan interview, yep. Michael writes in a great comment about tax rates favoring capital over labor.
Well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it kind of always has been. It comes and goes. But I always thought that the thing should be, I don't know what your feeling on this is, John, but I always thought stuff should be fair. I think that you shouldn't have corporations. I mean, the formula was, when I was in grad school, and it's still the formula, you know, when should you pay out dividends to people, okay, if you're a corporation? You should pay them out when you think. Let's put this way. You should not pay them out if you think you can invest the money appreciably better than the shareholders, okay? Which means, you know, I've got 48 projects that I'm going to make over 10% on, and after that, I don't really have anything else that we've thought of doing that's good. And, oh, by the way, I've got X dollars a share left. Why don't I pay some of that back out the dividends? Because maybe those guys have a stock they like or whether they do something. But which makes
right.
Perfect common sense. I mean, right, Matt, even you from that. But now the problem comes is if there's double taxation of dividends, and if you give that money to the shareholders, and they used to have to pay, you know, 50%, or even now it's 35, you get this haircut, shall we say. Even if my project is 35% worse than what yours would be if I gave you the money, I'm still going to do it because you're going to get screwed by the taxes. In other words, it actually makes sense in a stupid sort of way for me, if a stock is trading $50, another company, to pay $65 for the company instead of giving you the money to pay $50, because you got to pay 35% tax on what I gave you. So I've always felt, even though people think I'm this, you know, liberal mass, which I'm not, I always thought that was... That's what caused Warren Buffett to keep everybody's money forever. That's what causes Microsoft. These other guys have this huge pile of money overseas. They don't want to give it back to anybody, and their excuse has always been the tax law. So what I would have liked to have done this time, and these guys made a step toward it, I would like to see everybody pay the same amount. In other words, if the maximum tax rate for you and I and John and our listeners is 35%, that's what companies should pay. Okay, now if they hand out a dividend, they should get a break on that. Because if we're going to cause the other guy to pay, they shouldn't both pay. You shouldn't pay 35% at the corporation and then pay 35% when you get the dividend. Why should you? Nobody. I mean, it causes this discontinuity, or where all of a sudden these companies hang on to this money and make stupid investments and get so big that they shouldn't be, and all of a sudden start paying people more than they should be. It causes a mess over time, and I think a lot of what you see are the excesses of corporate America are because of that, and I really like to see it come back the other way. Now, as for putting money up for capital gains, I'm not so sure that works two ways. If you buy a house, Maddie, not the one you live in, 25 years ago, and for $50,000, and all of a sudden now you sell it for $150,000, but oh, by the way, the inflation has been 200% since you bought it. Why should you pay tax on it? You haven't made any money, have you?
No, you've lost.
Well, you broke even. If inflation's
20%, it's 200%, I guess you broke dead even.
You broke dead even. So why shouldn't at least the capital gains piece be indexed? Even though I don't like our CPI, but at least give it a shot. And then by the same token, if you have a capital gains tax that's half the regular tax, like we sort of do, and you buy something, you hang on to it for 1 year and a day, and the inflation is 1% that year, why should you get half your tax off? I mean, it makes no sense.
Well, is it because that there's no perfect way to calculate what the actual inflation has been?
Well, but I say, make a stab at it.
I mean, right, they should make a stab at it, but then you got two parties fighting over what.
But even if you want to give somebody an incentive to invest capital, okay, which I don't have a problem with, and say that if it's a capital income, I would do this. I would say index it. Okay, so if I put money into a stock or a building or whatever 10 years ago, and I put $100 in there, and the inflation rate's been 140, okay, I really don't have to pay tax now on 60. Now, if you want to say the capital gains rate is 5% or 10% lower than the regular weight on top of that, that's fine. But at least let's even it up. I mean, some people don't even make any money even though it's up, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if your parents bought a house in 1960 something, hopefully they're still alive, and they bought it for 25 and now it's 200, they didn't make anything. Did they? Probably not.
Yeah, probably
not. Plus they paid interest on it too.
Right. Well, that they should have gotten to deduct along the way, which again is another why is interest deductible? Why should it be deductible for anybody? Corporations or people? I mean, all it does is give a one-time increase to home ownership. The guy who owns the house or the apartment building versus the person who's buying it the next time. It all evens out. I mean, it makes no economic sense. Now, granted, if somebody buys a house tomorrow, you can't change the law on them on Sunday, or you're really screwing them. But if I was president, I would have no problem saying, over the next 20 years, next year your interest is 95% deductible, next year it's 90, next year it's 85. There's no reason for that, because you end up having an inflated housing prices, which we have, right?
Over and over.
Over and over.
Yeah.
So, I mean, why not fix some of the stuff that the tax law drives out of whack? And yes, the guy who tweeted in is absolutely correct, and I can probably rattle off four or five major mess-ups with the tax code that have been there forever, and you can look at, in my opinion, what it's caused to happen. Too many companies hanging on to too much money, buying up other companies, being too big. The guys who run the place, half of them probably aren't worth it, and they're getting paid three times what they should be. It's all because you cannot win the dividend argument in the boardroom when the guy you're handing it to has to pay another 35% on it. I mean, it makes no sense. So there. Whoever it was got me out of my soapbox.
That was Michael. Thanks for tweeting. And it was Bill Cohan's comment.
Excuse me, I just fell off the soapbox. I broke my ankle.
Don't break your ankle. David from Florida writes in, and you can follow us on Twitter at Stocks, the letter N, Jocks, or you can email us, stocksandjocks@live.com. Be sure to do that. He says, Swiss 10-year yield proxy for global quad 4 deflation risk gets crushed to negative 0.04%. Is that inflation, deflation, or stagflation?
That's the central bank having too much money out there. I mean, you have to ask yourself. I mean, and David's bright. We banter back and forth. What would possess if David dropped $100 million on Jan and me to manage of his or his dad's money? Hopefully, his dad's still alive. And the first thing I did was charge him 1% a year to buy a bond paying no money. I got to believe I should have to make sure somebody else starts my car. Right? I mean,
otherwise it's going to be Godfather style.
Yeah, it's a horrendous investment. So you ask yourself, who could possibly be buying that? The only person buying it thinks that the Swiss Central Bank is going to be stupider than you are, and they're going to buy it at a higher price. Why would anybody give somebody money, and at the end of the year you give you back less? And especially if it's 10 years, for God's sake. I mean, who would do that? I mean, what manner of moron, and you shouldn't say that on the air, would do that? Unless you thought there was a bigger moron going to come and buy it from you. Did any of these people think they're going to hang on to this for 10 years and just sit there every year getting nothing? I mean, what the hell? Jan, I'm on a roll here, but really.
No. You are 100% correct. And, I mean, that kind of thing has been happening in Japan, or there's several places in the world where you're buying these negative interest rate bonds, and things like that. And, granted, you're not going to keep up with any sort of inflation, but you're better to hide it under your mattress or that's why before we've had a little bit of a trouble. There was, things obviously like the precious metals. To a lesser extent, they tried it with these cryptocurrencies, things like that to balance this kind of thing out. And obviously, we know where the cryptos have gone, but we've seen a little bit of, life in the precious metals, but that's really what they're supposed to be for when things like this happen.
Well, let me just real quick, just so everybody understands the formula. Okay, if you have a forever bond, all right, it's real easy to price. I mean, the capital asset pricing models, which nobody knows anymore, it's real easy to price. If it's a forever bond and it is 10% is the going rate, okay, and you buy this bond and you're making it sends you $1,000 a year, you should pay $10,000 for that, correct? Because you get 10% interest forever and 10,000 bucks is $1,000 a year, correct? I mean, it's very simple. Now, if you have a bond itself, now when you price a bond, a 30-year bond is somewhat sort of forever, right, John? But not really. But say a 10-year bond, when you pay a price for it, say you pay 75 bucks for it or 95 bucks for it, the difference, now you're going to get interest for 10 years, whatever the coupon is, and you're getting $100 at the end of 10 years. So you're going to get the $5 difference, which is worth something. I mean, not a whole hell of a lot, because the interest on that is if your factor is 10%, but you're also going to, but I'm going to say if you're paying 95 for it, the coupon of the bond when you're trying to get 10% is going to be what, 9.5, John? So you're going to get your 9.5% plus the $5 kick, which gets you up to 10% over the 10 years, correct? I mean, people should know how these things are priced, because it's going to come back. So if you're trying to make more than the coupon, you're paying less than the whole number. Matt, you understand what I'm talking about?
Yeah, right. I think so.
So if the bond is a $100 bond and it's paying 9.5%, and the market value of the interest rate right now is, say, 10%, you're not going to pay the full 100. You're going to pay 96, 97, 95% of the value. And that compared with what they're paying per year, they're paying 950 bucks, not 1,000, plus the difference in the price, going to get you up to 10%. Okay, so people, as we start got in this interest era now, people have to work their way up on this. So what we're saying on a zero and a negative interest bond is the total interest paid on this particular bond, say, is 30 bucks, and somebody's paying 132 for the bond. So if you take all the interest you make for 10 years plus the money back at 10 years is less than you paid for it. I mean, Matty, can you think of anything stupider?
add insult to injury, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, can you ever? Let me get this straight. You just put $130 of my money in this 10-year German bond. Yeah. Well, how much do I get back? $125. No, I mean with interest. No, $125. What are you doing? I mean, it's unconscionable. Except, no, wait a minute. Draghi's gonna. I just paid $130 for it. Don't worry, Draghi's going to be 132 bid tomorrow, and I'm going to make 2% in a day. I got this covered. Until one day, you know, the Lone Ranger doesn't come over the hill. Then we got a problem. Because nobody else is going to. I don't think. I mean, you have to assume that the only buyer there, the only one that dumb, is a central bank. I mean, or am I going crazy here, Jen?
No, you're not going crazy.
For this reason, at least.
At all, so.
Maybe for other reasons, you know, maybe for...
You know, people, it's kind of esoteric. Yeah, I think you explained it very well, but everybody out there scratching their heads going, you know, why the heck would anybody do this, and rightfully so.
Now, John, have you had anybody, I know here at this office, we've had some people now recently that have taken some of their free cash and put it free cash, their extra cash that they didn't really necessarily put in the market, or, you know, maybe they got a $5 million account and they got $4 million in the market. We've had some people go to the auction for the treasuries and get, you know, I'll round it off, say 2.5% for 6 months. It actually was like 2.4, but guys have said, you know, that's enough for 6 months. And even if interest rates start going up every day, it's only 6 months. I can live with that. I mean, have you had any of those guys or not? I know Dan goes to auction.
Absolutely. That part makes sense. Short end of the spectrum in all things. I'm obviously just in the short end of the spectrum, and I have been for some time, actually. And what I mean by the spectrum, just for the folks out there, is that any of the bonds I hold are very short term right now.
I mean, we never recommended anybody do that at 0.5%, but at 2.4, that's better than a sharp stick in the eye. I believe for 6 months, if you don't, 6 months isn't that long. Does Dan go to the auction for you? I imagine he does.
Truthfully, I've done this with the ETFs for the most part, like that.
Right.
And just on the, you know, short end, like on a, you know, TLT and other things along those lines. Only thing I have that are longer term are probably some of the municipal funds, to be honest with you.
Well, those
are ETFs, I should say.
Well, those you can't sell. God, we've had some people, that brought accounts into, PTI. I mean, even though, I'm our municipal bond guy. I don't know if you knew that or not, John, but I'm our municipal bond principal, but we've never gone out and got some for people. But we've had people transfer them in, and you know what, John? Boy, some of those, when people ask us to sell them, it's a project to try and get a price. I mean, if you, somebody says,
right.
I mean, everybody assumes that every municipal bond is going to be, I was going to say AAA Chicago. God. What was the last time Chicago was AAA, Matty? Maybe it was long before I was born, I think. But I'm going to say everybody thinks it's a state of New York or something. Something. There's a gazillion of these things out there. It might be a TIF for some casino district in New Jersey or someplace. Or a TIF area or something. Try and sell that bond. There isn't a market in any of this stuff, Jan. I mean, you can lob it out
well,
there.
Right, and once again, this is why I use the ETFs for stuff like that. I don't have to have the worries of getting out of the individual bonds.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
Number two, I have obviously clients in other states, but I'm pretty good credit rating on the actually a very good credit rating on the Arizona munis, which are the bulk of what my folks have, of course.
Well, that makes sense.
That's two different things that are different than you guys.
But if you can ask people, and in fact, without naming them, some of the contributors to the show, and shall we say, one of our weekly co-hosts happens to be that's his job, man. I mean, he was on both sides, both for the munis and for the law firms that put the things together, and he will tell you. And I'll ask him next time he's on. When they come out with a bond for the Chicago Public Schools or anybody, they don't care about the secondary market. Their assumption is some insurance company is buying the damn thing for 30 years and they're just going to hang on to it. If I say, well, suppose I were to buy one of these, I need to turn it around the next day. Well, why would you want to do that? Well, because people die, stuff happens, Well, no, that's not what these bonds are for. I mean, that's why the thought of even Arizona with a credit rating pretty good, I got to believe, John, if you jump in at one of those auctions and all of a sudden a month from now the guy says, wow, a hurricane hit my house. I need to sell that bond. You're probably not going to get the best price. I mean, the markets just aren't that good, which is,
Well, right. And once again, that's why I use the ETF, so I don't have
to. Well, is there a muni bond ETF?
Yeah.
Now, do you get the same tax?
Well, let me put this way. They're funds, excuse me. Okay. You do a closed-end fund, something along those lines.
Yeah, I was going to say, if it was an ETF, I wonder if you would get the tax break. I won't say tax dodge. I wonder if you'd get the tax break if it was a muni ETF and they just paid a dividend. I don't know. I'm going to say that wouldn't follow through, John, but I don't know that. I'm not a tax guy.
Well, I mean, yeah, that I don't know. Obviously, for the listeners out there, for the mutual fund or closed-end fund, you know, you get the break if you live within that state.
If somebody knows that, can wing us a tweet for Monday. That'd be terrific, because now I got myself curious. Self, I'm curious. John, thank you. S&P futures up 950, Dow futures up 96, NASDAQ futures up 30. Hopefully we'll end the week on a positive note. 2 days like yesterday is too many in a week. We'll be right back. Be right back Monday morning, Stocks and Jacks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.